Hello, and welcome to Volsteadland. We will walk you through the life of the notorious gangster from Minneapolis called Kid Can. We are your hosts. I'm Amy.
And I'm Heather. In the Prohibition years of Minneapolis, Minnesota, there was an underworld. Gangs of bootleggers, bandits, sluggers, and murderers roamed the streets and conducted their business. One of the most legendary figures of that time was Kid Can. Volsteadland explores this world.
Recently, we were presented with the opportunity to do a live show here in Minneapolis at the iconic CC Club, which has its own ties to bootlegging and prohibition. The timing is perfect, as a book about Kid Can has just been released, and so has a short film about his life. And hopefully you can join us at our live show, May 3rd, 2025. Prepare for engaging interviews, lively discussions, and maybe even a few surprising revelations. We hope to see you at the CC Club, May 3rd, 2025. Ghosty fam, Amy here. Welcome to The Activity Continues, a podcast where three soul friends talk about all things paranormal. Ghosts, hauntings, psychics, movies and TV shows, especially The Dead Files, and other spooky and spooky adjacent things. We also like to interview people in the paranormal community, as well as past Dead Files clients and other interesting people. Sometimes we even tell your stories. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi friends, Amy here. Thanks for joining us this week. In this episode, our guest is Brittany Baxter Dameron. Brittany is a mental health therapist who has worked with clients with mediumship skills and has learned about their struggles with discerning between what is their stuff and what is other stuff. She is also a longtime fan of The Dead Files, and she reached out to us through our website to suggest that we do an episode on how to listen to our own emotions, body sensations, and intuition when connecting with the spirit world. We loved this idea, and we are so grateful that she agreed to come on the show and share with you. We are lucky that Brittany is local, and we had the opportunity to meet up with her in person at a coffee shop and get to know each other and plan what she would like to talk about. And we have some really interesting concepts and ideas to share with you. The first part of this episode is a little sciencey, as Brittany breaks down for us some basics about the type of therapy she does. We talk about the ego parts of self and EMDR, the brain, and how each part works, etc. Then Brittany connects this to Dead Files episodes that we've all seen, including how PK manifestations work, why someone's eyes might go black, possession versus mental health, demons, and a few other cool things. We hope you enjoy our conversation with Brittany.
Hey, Brittany.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
How are you today?
Doing good. How about you?
Just, you know, honestly loving the weather. Like, I went outside this morning and I'm like, do I even need a coat?
I had my windows open yesterday and it was amazing.
I thought about it.
My windows are open right now.
The fresh air in. I will go open my bedroom window before I go to bed so I get some fresh, cool air in. Oh, it's amazing. I don't like the mud.
No.
With dogs.
Yeah. I don't like the mud, period. Dogs.
Oh,
no
I
dogs.
Love mud.
I don't like it.
Mud is awesome, but mud and dog prints.
Feet? Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Brittany, are you a cat or dog person? I forget.
I'm only a cat person. I have four of them.
Yes. That's right. I knew I liked you.
Yeah, you can call me a crazy cat lady. It's all good.
Anyway,
we do have actual
Brittany,
stuff to talk about.
Brittany, you walked into it. Here
I
we
know.
Are.
Sorry,
this
Brittany.
Is it. I was expecting
just
it. It's all good.
Walked right
Brittany's
through that
like,
shit.
I gotta go. Ooh, I just remembered. I gotta reorganize myself.
The Homer Simpson meme, just slowly going back into the shrubs.
Or the glasses that make his eyes look open when he's actually sleeping underneath him.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too.
That is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much. And especially for joining early. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, of course. Brittany is a listener. She has heard several of our episodes already.
And she still came on.
We did meet ahead of time with Brittany a little bit to discuss what we wanted to talk about on the show. And she had all these great ideas about all this stuff pertaining to the Dead Files.
It was great.
Brittany, do you want to explain to the people what you what you do, what your title is, what your profession is, and how you saw that it could relate to our show.
Absolutely. So I'm a mental health therapist. Trauma is my specialty. And the types of therapies I used, they're the best ones in my opinion. EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and ego state parts work. So ego state is a type of therapy. There's lots of subsets of ego state. So like internal family systems is one of the popular ones now, which is cool. It's a good one. But so like Freud's id, ego, superego, that was like the original ego state work. Then Jungian stuff like the shadow and that kind of stuff. So it really started way back in the day, but it's gotten a big resurgence now through EMDR because it's a good way to help people stabilize for reprocessing negative self-beliefs and traumatic memories. But parts work is actually really amazing for anybody because it just helps us tap into our inner resources that we all have. We all have different parts of self. And if we know how to listen to them and use them as our guides, friends, team, whatever you want to call it, it just makes our lives easier, maybe not easier, but a little more adaptive, easier to get through not great times. So anyway, that's in a nutshell what I do.
Cool. I love it. And when we met and we talked about the parts of self and stuff, I was like, I have almost a degree in psychology back from the 80s, but I didn't actually graduate. It's a different story. But so all of anything psychology wise is
anything
very
psycho?
Interesting. To,
so, yeah. That was a Freudian slip right there.
anything like that's interesting to me. And so when Brittany was telling us about the parts of self and stuff, I was like, ooh, I need to know more about this. Mm-hmm. So especially as it pertains to some people on the Dead Files.
Absolutely.
But we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So can you explain what EMDR is? Because I didn't know what it was. I Googled it and I still am not sure that I understand. Sure. Something about moving your eyeballs to make your synapses fire differently or something like that. I know that's totally wrong, but
so you're onto something. So EMDR, it started with eye movements. Francine Shapiro, the lady who developed this therapy, she kind of stumbled onto it because we all do this sort of thing. When we're thinking, we kind of like look off to the left, kind of look off to the right. When we're processing, just kind of like, oh, I'm talking it out. You know, where our eyes kind of go the back and forth deal. When we're sleeping, REM sleep, our eyes are all over the place. That's when we're dreaming. So through the eye movements, it facilitates deeper processing on a more kind of specific level. So we have the same type of memory that the way computers kind of work, if I'm going to make it simple. So we have RAM, which is our working memory, and then we have long-term memory of like hard disk space. So eye movements or any side-to-side movement, bilateral stimulation, so anything that crosses your meridian. So I like to do butterfly hugs because everything I do is online. I can see people doing this. I can say, oh, you're going a little fast. Let's take it slower, whatever. So any side-to-side movement, sometimes people just kind of paddle their feet, whatever. So that taxes the working memory. So we get our RAM kind of tied up so we can access the hard disk space of our you know, sometimes our subconscious, but sometimes just memories we want to just shove away. The bilateral stimulation helps to kind of get to that deeper stuff.
Okay. So, is it kind of like when you do a mundane task, like washing dishes, that frees up your mind to think about other problem solving things?
Yeah.
That's why I love going for runs and walks.
Oh,
yeah. When I get stuck on a problem for work or running is really becoming an outlet for me when I'm frustrated or need an outlet and I don't have a punching bag.
Loves me at run.
Yeah, riding probably wouldn't be for me, but we talked about this, the episode that Megan and I did with Beverly McChesney. We talked about that because she doodles while she's doing her readings. She's a psychic. And when she does her readings, she doodles. And that's just sort of to keep that one set of her, one part of her mind doing something so she can concentrate on other things.
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's just one aspect of the EMDR. So EMDR works on negative cognitions, which is the like the technical term, but any negative self-belief, like I'm not good enough, I'm a failure, I can't do anything right. They come in all shapes and sizes. We all have them. Yeah, we all have
that.
Yes.
I'm like, check.
Exactly. Wait, other people have those thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Almost everybody.
Yeah.
So these can come from seemingly innocuous things that we wouldn't even expect to have lingering effects on us. It can be from a really tragic thing like car accident, combat, domestic violence. So we develop these negative cognitions based off these maladaptive things that we have to go through. And so EMDR helps to transform the negative cognition, like I'm not good enough, into a positive cognition, which is like, yeah, I'm doing the best I can. I'm good as I am, whatever. Mm-hmm. We reprocess that by finding the touchstone memory, which is the worst or the first one that really solidified that negative cognition. Then we do the bilateral stimulation that just helps reprocess. And then by the time we're done, they're just left with positive self-beliefs.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, that's great. It's one of
Takes
the best
something
therapies
negative and kind of makes it positive.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Brittany, I know you had like some ideas of things that you wanted to cover, and I want to make sure that we get to the stuff that you would like to cover before, you know, without, I know we're going to go on tangents anyway, but I want to make sure that we use your time wisely. So what would you like to go over with us first?
Okay, so let me start with some basics. So parts of self is a little more down the road. I'm going to get back to that. So the very first thing is I have a bachelor's and master's of social work, and I love the social work degree rather than clinical psychology or whatever, because social work is very focused on the person and environment and how biology, psychology, social life, and spirituality all kind of converge together to help us be healthier or not so healthy. So with that being said, there's a lot of overlaps between mental health and spirituality and our relationships, our physical environment. We are complex beings that live in a complex world. So we have to pay attention to all of these things. It's not just straight mental health. It's not just straight spirituality. Mm-hmm. Everything overlaps. Everything.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's
yes.
like a piece of the puzzle that is us.
Yeah, absolutely. So because we're complex creatures and we live in a complex world, we have to have different parts of self so we can operate efficiently in different situations in life. I mean, how inefficient would it be if we had to relearn how to tie our shoes every day, drive a car, all of this stuff? Mm-hmm. So our parts of self form as we go through different life experiences, starting even before we're born. Neurons that fire together, wire together. So any stimulus will fire a neuron that's just pertinent to the stimulus. And the more stimulus we have, the more neurons fire, they wire together. So each individual little neuron, they can kind of make clusters, neural networks. And this
Mind
is what
meld.
Creates it, something like that. Yeah. So this is what creates the different parts of us, different neural networks that do different things. So I like to describe parts of self as different packages of thoughts, emotions, body sensations, motivations, memories. So there's lots of different parts of self that we have. I don't know how many we have. So many.
Probably at least 10.
At least 10. Yeah.
At least 10.
Well, at least.
This goes along, like as you're talking and I'm thinking about research that I've had to do for other things, but along that lines of like, we all have bias, right? We all have unconscious bias, because I've talked to people before on here, and if you heard, like, we get 11 million pieces of information every minute, but we only consciously process 40. So when you're talking about like all the different things, I always said we catalog, like our brains just put it in that Rolodex and catalog it away so that we know when we're in danger and when we're okay, or when we get into that situation, your heart starts to flutter like, I have to confront somebody and I don't like this.
Yep, that's right. Absolutely. So I don't know how many parts we have, but we have basic functions of parts, and there are six basic functions. And those are kid, critical, logical, responsible, protector, and nurturing. And I'll explain that more later. So these different functions of parts have different roles and responsibilities, of course. So I'm going to get back to this more advanced stuff of parts. Let me go back to some basic stuff. So because we live in a complex world and we live in a physical world, a lot of things that affect us physically will also affect us mentally, like black mold. That's a really good example of a physical thing in the environment that can affect our mental health.
Really? Wow. That's a good example. Dang.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, different types of environments, like a combat zone, an active war zone, that is going to really screw with your mental health. If you're just in a hoarding environment, you're going to be like, I don't feel good here. On the flip side, our mental health can directly affect our physical world too. So that hoarding environment, if I've got a lot of junk going on in here, I've got a lot of junk going on out here.
Interesting. I've never made that correlation before.
Have you never watched Hoarders?
No.
Oh my
I
God.
mean, I've seen clips of it, but I've never watched
no.
like an episode from start to finish.
Oh,
you might want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Brittany, I feel like you and I could talk about Hoarders episodes for quite a bit, because I know my grandpa was a very, he was there. We just never let him.
Yeah.
Nobody ever let him.
John's grandpa was a huge hoarder. He had a warehouse full of stuff. And
my mom was
that
too.
That would be minor compared to some of the things on these shows where
Yeah, it's bad. My grandpa was a hoarder too. I think a lot of our grandparents or people who lived through the Great Depression ended up being hoarders.
Exactly.
Or
yes,
had a lot of
starting.
Yeah.
Had a lot of siblings. And so you didn't get, especially I think if you were an older sibling and you were neglected with the younger siblings coming in and that sort of thing is what I've noticed, at least in my casual observations.
Absolutely.
So then if somebody was a result of the depression and the Great Depression, not like having depression, but I mean, could that be considered mental health, or could that be just like a product of the environment that they were in? Or is that kind of the same thing?
It's the same thing. It's both. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's both overlapping. Chicken and the egg. So just
Got
to kind
it.
of,
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of piggybacking off of that, what's going on in here directly affects what's going on out here, to kind of tie it in with dead files and stuff that you guys really do well talking about, like poltergeist and PK manifestations. So I'm going to get back to that later. But essentially what happens is we're not containing all of our stuff physically. It kind of gets radiated out in ways that we don't even realize is what's happening. And I'll loop back around to that one too. So because everything that happens, we perceive happens in our brains are the most important part of all of this. So if I can screen share, I'll just show you a quick picture.
But I love what you said there, because it's also pain is all in our brain, because that's where our nerve endings go and tells us that that hurts, even though.
Isn't that I can't think about that too long because it'll make my brain hurt.
You also don't want to think about what nothingness is, because that's what, like, everything that's here in the Big Bang Theory all fit within the size of a 12 size 12 font decimal
period.
Point.
Yeah.
Everything that we see today.
Yeah.
Our brains can't comprehend.
Also, it drives me nuts, kind of related, but not. How can, when it's cold out, how can the temperature be 0 degrees? Isn't that no degrees? How
no,
are we?
No, zero and nothing are not the same.
I don't like it. I think it should go from one to negative one.
Absolute zero is what? -273? Something like that.
It just doesn't make sense to me. How do we have 0 degrees? That's no degrees. How do we have 0 degrees?
Because you can have negative integers.
Yeah, but I just don't like it.
It's just arbitrary.
I know. I'm sorry. Not. That's tangent number one.
You're good.
One.
Sorry.
That was one.
That's funny. Okay, that's a bigger picture of the brain. Okay, so what happens in the brain, it really depends on which part or parts of the brain is functioning. So there is a trend here. So this we're looking at half of the brain. So if we cut our brains in half, right down the corpus callosum and like pull it out, we're looking at the very inside of the brain. So this outer layer is the cortex. That is our higher functioning, like, you know, math skills, language, reasoning.
Oh, mine is broken.
I guarantee it's not.
I don't know. Have you heard some of these episodes?
Man.
I have. This is our cerebellum. This coordinates our thoughts and coordinates our movements. This is our brainstem. This regulates all of our automatic stuff, like our breathing, our heartbeats, all of that stuff. And then this collection of parts in the midbrain is called the limbic system. This is like the thalamus, hypothalamus, amygdala. Blah, blah. So the limbic system is the epicenter of our stress or threat processing, emotional processing, and short-term memory and the long-term memory. So with emotions, stress or threats, and long-term memory processing, things can go really haywire. And this is a lot of the time what happens when we get traumatized. Things get stuck in the limbic system. It doesn't get unstuck. So let me move on to this next one. So this is where emotions come from. I found a vibration chart because this really actually fits with nice. What goes on in our emotions.
And so just quickly to tell people who are not watching the screen, is that we are seeing what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 layers of vibration with words that are associated from red being hatred, fear, low vibration, to peace and gratitude in a very beautiful purple rain at the top in a very high vibration.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Thank you, Amy.
Yes, thank you. So when we are calm, our stress response is not on. I'll explain the stress response here in just a sec. So when we're calm, things are good. You know, we're happy, we're peace, we love, joy, all of these things we want to feel. That is when our stress response is off. That's we're in a lot more high vibration area. As soon as anything triggers the limbic system to say, hey, something's not quite right, that turns on the stress response, and that's fight, flight, freeze. So the limbic system basically picks up on any real or perceived threat. A real threat is anything that's going to hurt or kill us. A perceived threat is anything that's going to make life harder, like a negative cognition, like, oh, my boss hates me, oh, I'm going to get fired. So these stress response emotions that we have are more lower vibration. So the three branches of a stress response, fight, flight, freeze. Fight response brings a lot of anger and those flavors of emotions. Flight is anxiety and all of those flavors of emotions. And then freeze or shutdown. Freeze is kind of like the deer in the headlight, can't move. That's kind of halfway between flight and shutdown. So shutdown is basically like I'm immobilized, usually because at this point, fight response didn't get me out of this bad situation. Flight response didn't get me out of this bad situation. So I'm just going to play dead and hope things pass over and I'm going to be okay. So those are the three branches of the stress response, these different emotions. So the main emotions of freeze or shutdown is depression, sadness, that kind of stuff. So depending on what's going on in our brains, we'll also go on with our emotions and our energy. So our highest functioning part of the brain is the cortex. That's where we're going to get these non-stress response emotions. And then the lower parts of the brain, like the limbic system, the brainstem, that's where we get the lower vibration emotions, stress response emotions.
And again, if you can't, if you're not visually seeing this, this is the scale is now overlaid over the brain to kind of show how it through like layers of the earth or layers of the atmosphere, if you've seen that. Oh, so this connects really well. I do a lot of change management stuff. And those emotions and the colors, they fit on the change curve of where people are in fear or enthusiastic. And you can be anywhere at any given time during any change that's going on in your life. And those relate like same words are on the on the change chart.
Cool.
I'm continuing to nerd out over here being all the science stuff because I get it. Like, yeah. Like, ooh, this.
All right, sorry. I was just looking for the
medulla oblongata from Waterboy.
Yeah.
No, it's an old reference if you haven't seen it.
Good movie.
High quality H2O.
Mama calls it the medulla oblongata.
Okay, so I got a few more basics, and I'm going to get into the real good stuff. So
this stuff already, so yeah, I can't imagine.
Solid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is just the basics. We're going to get to the exciting stuff. So a lot of what goes on with our mental health, emotional health, spiritual health, relational health is energy. Different branches of the stress response will bring different types of energy, different emotions, different energy, different dynamics, different energy. Energy is considered a physical property, which I'm not a physicist. I had to look that one up.
And not be created nor destroyed.
Absolutely.
So all energy has to go somewhere, whether it is a life form or motion, like even just running your hand through the air, you're shifting particles that have to go somewhere because there's now energy that's given. So you have potential and kinetic energy are your big energy types.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'll see myself out.
No, you're great. This is awesome. So I will use different energy frequencies of like stones and crystals and stuff when I'm meeting with different clients. Like right now I'm holding my lapis lazuli to help me speak more clearly, all of this sort of stuff. Different physical things like quartz have different physical properties and will affect us different as well. So I looked up the physical properties of quartz. It's a hexagonal crystallography. So it means it forms in like a hexagon shape. has high thermal conductivity, which means it can transfer heat quickly and efficiently, but is not an electrical conductor. So it's funny how it doesn't conduct electricity, but it's a good heat conductor. Heat is a form of energy.
Energy, but not electricity.
Not electricity, and yes.
Because it is, so nerd out time, quartz is often found in stones like granite, because granite and quartz has a 6 to 7 on the Mohs hardness scale. So it's a very hard stone or mineral, but it's often found within igneous rocks, which are granite, which is slow forming from lava magma as it comes to cools down. So it's cooling under the ground, and that's why you get the crystals that grow further. And that's like when you see agates and things like that, there's a hole in the rock, and so the minerals go in there and form.
Love it.
Cool.
Yes, thanks for that. So you're spot on with all of that. These different things have different properties. So just depending on how it's formed, where it's formed, different energetic properties, of course. So one thing I like to use with my clients, if they are more on the spiritual end of things, one of my clients uses a pendulum just to tap into her subconscious. I will be like, oh, hey, what's your pendulum saying about this? She'll whip it out and we'll do it in session together, because I know that's picking up on her energy. A lot of the time our energy is subconscious. It comes from our subconscious thoughts. So our conscious thoughts are what is on our mind. I know what's going on. Subconscious is where parts of self live. So I'm going to get back to that. So one more basic thing, really quick. Everything has life force energy. I don't care if you believe in anything. You can be atheist. There's life force energy all around us. I mean, the sun, calories. I mean, there's energy all around us that give us life. However, there's energy that will take our life from us too. And I'm sure you've had an energy vampire or just someone who's so needy that they just suck you dry.
Or negative, constantly negative. Everything is negative.
That's an energy suck too.
Yes, it's horrible.
Absolutely.
Everything is negative.
Everything.
They could win the lottery and it would be negative because they'll be taxed.
Now you got to pay taxes.
Yeah.
Right? That's right. Yeah. I just have a Amy Allen quote here about energy. Yeah. Season 3, episode 12. I don't remember what that one was called, but it was about a ghost stealing other ghosts' energy. He uses their energy and he'll use it so much that he literally uses them up and they turn to dust and cease to even be anymore.
That's depressing.
Wow. It's kind of scary.
Definitely seen that in some ghost movies or shows and things where stuff like that happens.
Yeah. So energy is all around us. And that is really the main connector of mental health, spiritual health, mm-hmm. relational health, you name it, energy. So I was going to show some different snowflakes. So there was a guy in Japan, Dr. Emoto. He did a whole bunch of experiments on how our thoughts, our motivations, even different music will impact water and water crystals.
That is so cool.
It's good stuff. Let me screen share on this one too, really quick. People who are just listening, of course, they can't see this, but I'm sure AP will do an excellent recap of what we're seeing here.
If it's okay with you, I would take these pictures and I can put them in our blog. So if anyone wants to look at it while they're listening, we can post
them. In general, they look like just different cut glass. Like when you have the different patterns that are within some of the cut crystal and things like that. That's the snowflakes that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these have some captions. I'll tell you what the other ones are. So water crystal before a Buddhist prayer, it just looks like random water. After the Buddhist prayer, it's the beautiful snowflake.
Mm-hmm.
Down here, this in the intention of I can, beautiful snowflake.
Oh, wow.
Down here, I can't. It's a broken snowflake.
It's broken in half.
It's broken.
All blurred on one side.
It's like it started to develop and then it gave up.
Yes, absolutely. These two I thought were really fun. This is mutual affection and admiration between two people.
Okay.
It looks like kind of two snowflakes on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then this bottom one definitely looks like two snowflakes on top of each other. This is married love, essentially. The love between a couple of spouses.
Oh.
Interesting. I would have put that as mother child.
Yeah, because one's big and one's little.
Right.
That's cool, though.
I love that.
That's really neat.
Now I want a snowflake tattoo of the I can one.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's a beautiful one.
So cool.
You can come with me, Amy, to my tattoo appointment on March 15th.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm sure the artist would love an unplanned booking.
Well, I would talk to her.
Take a look.
Love it. All right. So some Dead Files quotes, basically, with different emotions, different frequencies, different just whatever emotions bring. Amy was talking about a male and a female arguing, living. This is energy chaos, living energy stuff. Hectic and chaotic energy. It's too much noise. And that happens when I have couples in sessions with me and it gets heated. It is definitely chaotic and I can just feel all the energy. It's just. So yeah, we can all feel that to certain extents. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of us are more in touch with that or more susceptible to it than others.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And it sounds like you're, Brittany, an empath as well. And you feel that. Because I know when we met, you were feeling anxiety at the table. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was from me.
I wasn't going to say that part.
I mean, I'll say it. It was from me.
Yeah. But yeah.
No, I know. When I argue with my husband, it's really hard because I pick up on his anger and then my anger. And it just gets so overwhelming for me that I have to like, and that's when I go into like the shutdown. I'm like, I can't function right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shutdown. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Not like that's nice, but very nice recall of the stress response.
Yes. Yeah. It's like when you said the flight, fight, or freeze. We always used to hear about fight or flight. Mm-hmm. That was just fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But yeah, freeze some of us do freeze. We just freeze or shut down.
Fawn as well.
Fawn is a part of freeze or shutdown. Yep.
Yeah, I think there's a slight difference, but.
There is.
Yeah.
I could get really technical if you want me to.
But I just know that I've seen a few people, so I could see somebody being like, well, what about fawn? We talk, I'm a fawn person. So
yeah. So there's a subcategory under shutdown is basically attach and submit. Submit is basically, I'm just going to go along with everything you say, even if I don't like it, even if I disagree, it's better to go along. It's path of least resistance. So fawning is part of that.
Petty come in? Because that's where I go.
That's a part of self. So I'll get back to that.
I mean, there's just sometimes I'm just like, fine, you want to do it that way? See how hard it is. And then you'll be like, oh, I should have done it this way. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You should have.
Yep.
Almost like someone told you to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be your critical part of self.
Yeah.
Yes.
Present.
Oh, yes. Okay, so just one more thing about just the energetic stuff we get from emotions. Like, even though everything I do is all online, if something is really, you know, big emotions, I will definitely feel it. I don't know if you guys know this term. It's called somatic countertransference. It's a technical term for if you're feeling something physically, I'm going to start feeling it physically. So if you start getting anxious and you're getting weird in your tummy, I'm going to start getting weird in my tummy. So that's how I'm an empath. Like I feel it physically. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just hard. I had a client last week that had a trauma memory unlock just kind of seemingly out of nowhere. I was expecting it at some point, but you never know when it's just going to. And so this trauma memory unlocked and it was just a lot of big emotions, just like, you know, kind of panic attack, freaking out. Ooh, I really had to just kind of wipe it off of me. I had to sit with some selenite for a while.
Yeah.
Just be in my room with all my plants and just be in the natural energy, even though it's cold outside and in my plant room. So anyway, this energetic stuff from our emotions is real.
Mm-hmm.
Not like I have to convince any of you or your listeners I'm preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
You are.
But it's good to understand that. And it's good to understand, like, I want anybody listening to know they're not alone, that's not something that's wrong with you or anything. Mm-mm. That we all have that to a different extent. Some of us feel it a lot. Some of us only feel a little bit. Some of us only feel it sometimes. Some of us feel it all the time.
In the words of Michael Jackson, you are not alone.
And And you have ways that you can build so that you stop feeling as much of that.
Yeah.
Because I definitely have, over the course of time, been like, nope, that's not mine. I'm not taking that one on.
Yeah. That's one thing Jenny taught us.
It'll catch me off guard, especially closer relationships are more difficult to shut that off of.
Oh, yeah.
In certain areas, but there are definitely ones where I'm like, nope, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not taking this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to get a little deeper into things. So with our stress response being on, this is where I'm going to bring in more Dead Files examples. So when we are more like lower vibration, we are attracting more lower vibration. And again, when we're higher vibration, we're attracting that. Nothing new. I know you guys know this and your listeners know this. When I was watching a bunch of Dead Files episodes to kind of get examples for this, one you did very recently, The Uninvited, season 9, episode 6.
Yep.
So I felt so bad for her. So Tila, the daughter, she was being attacked by this entity. Amy says it's taking over your soul. It's also affecting you physically. It's starting to strip you of your humanity, your personality, your you. They're working towards making you kill yourself.
Great.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Maybe ease into that, Amy. Maybe just like, it's kind of a lot.
I think Tila already knew it.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to use her mom. She's like, told you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Her mom probably knew it too. She's a medium now. I don't know if she was back then, but she is now.
They were great. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good.
So with her being, she was basically being abused by this entity. Yeah. It said, you know, if you tell anybody, I'm going to hurt you. That's classic abuse.
Right.
Classic abuse.
Like 101. Like,
yeah.
You read the first page.
Well, exactly. It's what worked for him in life.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So people are abusive because they want power and control over other people, over their environment, all of these things. They use tactics of abuse to gain and keep power and control.
Not like we're seeing any of that today.
Oh, no, none of that. Never. No.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Excuse me.
It's great here.
So even if we're not
Who needs rights?
What rights?
Rights, mites.
Exactly. So even if we're not being physically abused, if someone's using all the other tactics of abuse against us, even though it's not a physical, you know, hurter going to die, it's the perceived threat.
Yes.
Well, I'm not good enough. Why is my partner treating me like this? All of these perceived threats kick on the stress response, of course. The
what
more
did I do wrong?
Yes.
How did I make them mad?
Like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. So all of this is by design by the abuser to keep us in the stress response emotions, to keep us in the lower vibration because we're more easily controlled that way.
And we won't leave.
And we won't.
Because we're like, if I'm not good enough for this POS, nobody worthy is going to want me. So I might as well stay here.
Well,
that's right.
I will say from my own personal experience that it's not just, it wasn't for me, it wasn't a significant other. That it was a constant build up of pressure from society that was abusive.
Yes.
Of the, you have to do this by a certain age. You have to do this by a certain age. And I will tell
married.
You, if I could relive 2016, I would, because the green-eyed monster of jealousy had its teeth in me so strongly that I was so fake on the outside of being happy for everybody. I was in 4 weddings that year, 3 of them in a month.
Ooh.
And I went to 3 others, I think, that year. So I was... there was a lot of stuff going on psychologically. I was not in a good spot, but that negative, it just kept pulling down, pulling down, pulling down, pulling down until I had to make a physical, like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
I had to make a statement for myself.
How many people at those weddings asked you, well, who are you seeing? When's it your turn?
Oh, it'll happen when it
happens.
Yeah.
And it's like,
oh, just, you're just... when you're ready, it'll be there. Like, shut
when
the fuck up. I don't want to hear that.
It.
Oh, I will throw punch the next person that says any of that stuff to me because I'm not, I hate that saying. Stop saying that to single people.
Yeah.
Right.
Stop putting that, because those statements built into that monster that pulled me down. And I can tell you that it was in like about 2019, 20. Nope, it was about 2020 when I made another big change that said, I just need you all to validate that this is how I am. And I'm not upset that I'm not in a relationship. But as soon as I got people to validate that they could understand my feelings versus being like,
you just haven't met the right person.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off. I mean,
you're just
that is my response. That is my response now. And for everybody, I said I was willing. I was like, maybe I'll get back into the dating pool this year. It's fucking frozen. I'm not going back out there right now. Have you seen this world? So anyway, sorry to take over. But that was
tangent
to
my
experience of how that negative and that consistent, like, you're not good enough. Why not me? What is wrong with me? Why why am I such a problem? Why does everybody else seem to find somebody? What is it with me? It's I know my own problems, but you know, I have days like that, but I don't sit in it anymore.
Yeah.
But thanks for the therapy, guys.
That's a perfect segue into my next little spiel. So
I'll take my $20 later.
Love it.
We paid her AP. That's the way this goes.
Don't you understand? That's how we always do it in the corporate world, is we tell people thanks and I'll pay you $20 later.
Not on air. Okay, everybody, we're back.
Good stuff.
Nobody pays anybody. It has been
I know it's only Monday, but it has been just a
It's been a whirlwind.
I'm having wine tonight. on Monday nights, but okay.
You know what? No judgment at all.
None.
Thanks. I would have grabbed some if I'd gotten in here sooner. Anyway, back to Brittany.
Sorry, Brittany.
Yeah, you're good. So a lot of what we think will impact our emotions and our behaviors, and what we think really tends to impact our emotions and behaviors the most, especially with perceived threats. But ingrained ideologies like isms, racism, ageism, you name it, these come from more subconscious thoughts, but sometimes very conscious thoughts. Yeah, exactly.
Sexism.
Exactly, yeah. So when we have these ideas, ideologies, isms, whatever, these thoughts are like, this is the way it is, comes from our critical parts of self. And anytime these expectations essentially don't get met, our stress response turns on. So if we have really shitty ideologies, we're going to get pissed off all the time. Our stress response is going to be on all the time. We're going to be fearful. We're going to be mad. We're going to be whatever. And it's not going to be good. And I think this is a lot of what we're seeing. Yes, absolutely.
I paid attention. I will pass this
good
test.
Job, Megan.
Hello, thank 2016 you. Amy.
That was red.
Yes.
It was the red ones.
Yeah. Absolutely.
In the picture.
So I'm going to plug this book, Why Does He Do That? By Lundy Bancroft. This is like the expert on domestic violence and basically abusive people in general. He says the abuser's unfair and unrealistic expectations ensure that his partner can never follow all of his rules or meet all of his demands, the result that he is frequently angry or enraged. This is not a mental health problem.
No.
It's not. This is not anxiety. It's not depression. It is not a diagnosable mental health thing to have a shitty attitude.
Yeah.
If there is an asshole diagnosis, I'd have a lot more clients.
You would
I can
be
unofficially diagnose a lot of people with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. So that's a big problem with what our society wants to blame on mental health when it's not a mental health blame or a mental health thing, period.
Just being a douche.
It's being a douche. So let me throw some statistics your way. According to the NIH, at least for now, National Institutes of Health, individuals with mental illness are at least 3 times more likely to be targets than the perpetrators of violence. And overwhelmingly, the majority of people with mental illness are not violent, and the majority of people who are violent do not have identifiable mental illness. It is estimated that only about 4% of criminal violence can reasonably be attributed to mentally ill individuals.
Well, those are the serial killers. So
what would PTSD fall under? Because I think of people like the Vegas shooter who was, you know, a white man in his 50s, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when you think about people who come back from, you know, combat and they have PTSD, what would that fall under? Like, would that be considered a mental illness, a mental issue?
Yeah, it's a diagnosable mental health problem. Yes. So PTSD is basically just a collection of symptoms that basically say you went through some shit. You're really, mm-hmm. really struggling to process that shit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people with PTSD will have violent outbursts. That is a symptom of PTSD, but it's not premeditated like the Vegas shooting. That was premeditated.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So there's a big difference between being mm-hmm. triggered and snapping because your stress response is going off and I want to take out as many people as I can.
I mean, that's why there's a show called Snapped.
Mm. Yeah. But that's only about women.
Yeah, that's true.
But they get driven to a point, which mm-hmm. is still going into that concept. They're driven to a point of like, I can't do this anymore. And the only way out is this.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that is a parts of self thing. That is a mm-hmm. mental health thing. When women especially reach that point, they've done everything they possibly fucking can to make the situation better, but it's not on them. It's not their responsibility mm-hmm. to make better.
Yeah. They're not mm-hmm. sitting there going, I wonder what Tom next door tastes like in my stew.
That's right.
Gross.
That took a turn, everybody. Welcome to our podcast.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes.
That was an official quote on the bathroom at a JD. Restaurant somewhere.
Oh, good one.
Okay. Good old JD.
Our mental health doesn't make up who we are. Our mental mm-hmm. health is a facet of who we are. It's our choices and our ideologies and
Preach,
attitudes
girl.
That
Preach.
Make up who we are.
Yeah.
So I had to get on that soapbox. So, okay. It's parts of self.
We'll join you up there.
Yeah.
There's room enough for everybody on the soapbox of truth. Okay, I'm done.
You're good. So with our parts of self, our basic six functions of parts, they can be burdened or unburdened. Unburdened is what we want. That means our parts of self are free to be and do what they're meant to be and do. Mm-hmm. Burdened parts of self hang on to the traumas and the just not great stuff that we go through in life. These parts of self, the burdened parts, constantly hang on to this trauma. And that is the containment system. So a lot of people refer to it as like compartmentalization. It is. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. But it's a way to contain traumas and not great stuff. So with defense mechanisms, when we go through life, you know, bad shit happens, whatever, we have defense mechanisms. Oh, I don't want to think about that. I'm going to focus on my phone. So a lot of distracting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just going to watch TV. I'm just going to go drink, whatever, whatever.
I call that the Scarlett O'Hara method. From Gone with the Wind. I won't think about it today. I'll think about it tomorrow.
That's right.
That's how I deal with stuff. Healthy, I think.
Short term, it helps. Short term. There's more not so great defense mechanisms like dissociation. So dissociation is, you know, one lump term for lots of ways to basically say that if we're not consciously aware of something going on within ourselves or what we're doing, the disconnect is dissociation. And it's a spectrum of dissociation.
Mm-hmm. Is that like the killers who say, I was out of my body, I don't remember what I was doing because I dissociated and I got so mad that I just snapped and I don't recall?
Right. Everything turned black and next mm-hmm. thing I knew, I woke up in the morning.
Yeah, and how many of those are actually believable?
Yeah, like, Brittany, is that like a real thing that can happen or is that just BS they're saying to try to get out of being convicted
this does,
of murder?
Definitely does happen. Actually, the more burdened parts of self that we have, especially burdened protectors, burdened critical parts.
How would you prove that? Like, how do you, like in a court, how would you say he's telling or she's telling the truth or she's just full of BS?
Yeah, I don't know. I am not an expert witness. I've never have been. So I'm not entirely sure what that process looks like. But I can just tell you what it's like, the clients that I've worked with and how it generally goes. I really don't know what the burden of proof or whatever of that is mm-hmm. in a courtroom, whatever.
No, they would have to stick towards like the, not what the person says happened in the moment, but they'd have to stick with the clinical diagnosis. And is this potential that they would have as whatever mm-hmm. part of who they are and what their potential mental health state might be? Could this be a part of that? And I think that's where you see some people try to plead insanity. And it doesn't get through that because their insanity then says, has no remorse and mm-hmm. has none of that. And so they're saying, no, you knew exactly what you were doing. Stop playing
or
with
like
this.
They cleaned up after it. And then that's like, well, you knew what well, you that were doing because you tried to cover
I mean, that
it up.
Could be a trigger, though, for people, though, too, is especially if you've sorry, I'm so overstepping. But like, I think about people who have been in that relationship of like, oh, well, I don't know what else to do, but I need to clean this up.
Yeah,
there's a mess on the floor. There's a mess, and I don't want somebody to get upset that there's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. What happens is...
Sorry, Brittany.
No, you're good. So I like to call it, like, you know, who's in the driver's seat, parts on the bus kind of stuff. So, like, up here, if we're consciously aware of what's going on and, you know, things are calm, we're just kind of being ourselves, then this is the self. The self is the collection of all of the parts, but, you know, the... sum of the whole is greater than its individual parts, however that saying goes. So the self is our ability to be able to kind of higher up, have this awareness of ourselves. What's going on within ourselves? What am I feeling? What am you know, feel it physically and emotionally? What's going on with my parts of self? What thoughts am I having? So the self is the objective observer of what's going on within us. When a part of self takes over the driver's seat, essentially what happens is that part is the only one that gets to operate. So critical parts are a really good example. Something happens. This is so fucked up. I can't believe this shit. Gah! Easy. That's critical part. Burden critical. Mm-hmm. That part takes over because stress response is on. This is stupid. There's the thought. The stress response is usually the fight response, anger. Our attitudes are like, I don't care if I say this and hurt your feeling, whatever. That we don't have any real care or nurturing or whatever. It's just, this is the way it's going to be. That's a part taking
over
the
bus. So
would
you say that would be most like what abusers would be? Like they're critical is like in the driver's seat, strapped in. The door is locked. Nobody else can come in and take over.
When they are being abusive, yes. Yeah. And it's also often their protector part as well. Protector parts are the ones
which
in
is
there.
Ironic.
Right, I know.
Well, they're protecting themselves, not yes. the person they're abusing.
That's right. That's right. Just another quote, really quick. I can find this really quick.
You are so prepared.
I was
wow.
going to say when you're talking about the bus, I like to be on the seat part that gets to bounce over the wheels. You know, that's the most fun part to be.
That was a fun part.
The cool kids all hung out in the back, so I was up front.
Yeah, I was up front by the driver.
I was talking to the driver.
So I could get off when I needed to. Fear was always that I wasn't going to get off the bus when it was my turn. And then I'd be like, I end up being somewhere. I didn't know where I was. I'd be lost.
Oh, probably because the Moonies were going to come and get you.
I know.
The Moonies were just waiting for you to miss your bus stop.
I literally had to run after the bus one time because my normal bus driver would pick me up halfway past or like towards my house. So I didn't have to walk a block to my bus stop. But I was a substitute bus driver and I was standing there. And so they went past me and I'm chasing them down, running and throwing my hands in the air. And I get on the bus because I know the kid that was in the back of the bus who was, you know,
laughing at you.
He was at the same point. And I walked up to him and go, what the hell? Why didn't you say anything as I'm running half a mile down to catch the bus? And he's like,
oh, no,
like, shut up.
I thought it was funny. I'm a douche. Just kidding. He probably was.
He was older than me and bigger than me, but I could take him.
Probably.
I love it. So I found my quote here.
Okay, really quick. I got to head out because I got to put my little one to bed. I'm sorry. Normally I'd stay longer, but I really appreciated chatting with you and I can't wait to listen to the episode and hear what I missed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Have a great night, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Megan. Bye.
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 Okay.
Thank you for listening. The Activity Continues. We'll be back after this short break. Hi friends! Do us and yourselves a favor and check out our affiliate, Three Spirit Drinks. They create plant-based, non-alcoholic elixirs that are cruelty-free and vegan, and they are designed to give you some of the benefits of alcohol without the hangover and other side effects. If you're looking to cut down on alcohol but still want the buzz, check them out. The link is us.threespiritdrinks.com and use the promo code THEACTIVITYCONTINUES for 15% off your entire order.
Now we can get really into it.
Love it.
Oh, we're not going to go off on any tangents.
No.
So, yeah, exactly.
So essentially, with Burden Critical and Burden Protector kind of tag teaming, this is not good. Because what happens is, and it's good, quoting Lindy Bancroft, the abuser's highly entitled perceptual system causes him to mentally reverse aggression and self-defense. So when he's being abusive, he thinks he's being, you know, defending himself.
Defending himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's where does kind of... somebody who's in like always in victim mentality? I have a family member who's like this.
Yeah.
What's driving there?
It's always burden kid parts. Our kid parts are the most vulnerable. They hold the most trauma, the most inadequacy. They're the ones that are acutely aware of unmet attachment needs. The problem with people who are just straight up assholes, people who are diagnosable for narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorders, they will never admit they're experiencing symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
They may be experiencing symptoms, but they, again, their perceptual system, as Lundy says, is so skewed that, oh, I'm not the one with the problem. You're the one with the problem. I'm not feeling this way. You're making me feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I all never projection. Said
that. You didn't, nobody talked to me. Nobody did that.
Yep.
Except that they did, only their memory is literally isolation or, yeah.
Yep.
Amy, I think you know a little bit of what
I know
I'm
who you're talking
about.
Yep.
Yep. And that's actually a tactic of abuse, minimize, deny, blame.
Mm-hmm.
Or Darvo. I'm sure you maybe you've heard that.
It's story of this family.
What's Darvo?
Darvo is deny, attack, reverse victim and offender.
Yep.
Or victim with offender. So it's just the minimize, deny, blame. It's just a more specific kind of way to explain it.
Okay.
I'm so never at fault. It's always your fault.
Yes, yeah. That's right. That's right. So this is always a parts of self thing. It may not be a mental health thing, because if they're really exiling how they're feeling physically and emotionally, these kid parts that are hanging on to these negative self-beliefs and traumas, they're shoved so far back to the back of the bus, the bus back door is open and they're hanging on for dear life to that door. You know what I'm saying? They're not even allowed to be on the bus anymore.
I didn't know this was a speed situation.
Oh, it sure is. Yeah. In the more parts of self thing, more spirituality stuff. So a lot of the time, not called multiple personality disorder anymore, it's dissociative identity disorder. There's a lot of examples in our society and pop culture and stuff. Like, is this dissociative identity disorder or are they possessed? A lot of the time it's DID. People mm-hmm. can act and present exceptionally differently with different parts of the self being in the driver's seat of the bus. A lot of the time, if you're wondering, well, is this a possession? Probably not. It could be, though.
Well, and I think that goes to, you know, the raised Catholic aspect, but Catholic exorcisms, they really won't do them until there's been a mental health evaluation.
Yeah,
that's good.
And it has to go through certain levels. And that's the exorcist aspect that I've always grown up with. Now I know other divisions and other people have different, and they're all this type of exorcism, but I've always known as the Catholic side of it. But the show Evil, we've talked about before, and they go through and you have all these, you know, the three people that are going in to see, is this really a possession or is it a mental health disorder?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We definitely need to suss that out, because it is very odd to meet with someone with DID and they present so differently. And they even talk about themselves, like a part of the self will be in the driver's seat and they'll talk about other parts of self. And it's just kind of creepy. It's weird, but it's a mental health thing.
So somebody with DID, their multiple personalities are all parts of self that they have given an actual face and name and accent and body and all of that too?
Yes. Yes. So it's not multiple personalities. It's one personality. One. Lots of different parts. Just like a car engine. It's one engine, lots of different parts. Mm-hmm. The difference between our brains and car engines is put up these walls in between our parts of self. For sure. So
I'm sorry. I can't help myself tonight.
No, you're good.
I am so sorry.
I love it. So there's walls put up in between these different parts of self, because the just the very extreme circumstances that people have to live, survive mm-hmm. through, don't lend itself to have different neural networks going to the different parts of self. So this is like, I like to explain it like, a roadmap or whatever. Let's just say all the roads and bridges got bombed between all the major cities in the U.S. Like, there's no way to get from the Twin Cities to Omaha or to Dallas or whatever, whatever. And that's kind of what happens with different parts of self. There's no bridges. There's no neural networks to connect these different parts of self to have them communicate. And that's where the DID comes from. It's just so siloed off from each other. It's a survival mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think about, I know it's a movie, but Split with James McAvoy.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Scary.
It is scary, but he's so talented in those, but he has the multiple identities that are going through there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, where they come out at different times and it's like, no, I'm here to take control of this situation.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, and or manipulate the situation.
Yeah.
I remember it was a year or so ago, but I remember watching a woman who has DID and she would video herself when she's transitioning from mm-hmm. one to
that.
The next.
Not the person you're talking about, but I've seen that happen.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's more than this person out there, mm-hmm. but just kind of showing like, yep, so this is me. And then all of a sudden something happens and you can see this like physical change mm-hmm. that takes place. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'm Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a completely different situation. And so she was sharing these to kind of show and hopefully help people. She was trying to help people understand, like, this is how life is. Sometimes it's controlled and sometimes mm-hmm. it's not.
Right. Indeed.
And sometimes you call somebody, you know, it's like calling that person up and they're like, nah, I don't want
to. I don't want to
fuck
today.
When I do therapy with clients, like parts work with clients, I'm like, oh, let's look at your parts of self today, and their protector parts, like, ain't going anywhere, fuck you. And mm-hmm. so you just got to work with protector part, like, what's your hesitation to even go there? Parts of self will definitely hit the brakes on things and take over at times.
And I like that you didn't use a why question, because
why questions are the worst. I avoid them.
They
like
put
the
defense. They put yes. the defense mechanisms up, and so
that's right.
even in the corporate setting, we don't ask. I coach a lot of people that I work with. We don't ask, why are you doing it like that? Tell me more about this direction that you're going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really does change. Words change how people mm-hmm. react or think about things.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So moving on with schizophrenia. So schizophrenia is kind of in a way like DID. My theory, and of course I haven't done any empirical research, my theory is what these people diagnosed with schizophrenia are experiencing as far as the hallucinations are, they're different parts of self. So if they're hearing voices, if they're seeing things, they're hearing and seeing their different parts of self. If they're feeling tactile hallucinations, it's a part of self trying to say something. Mm-hmm. So that's my theory. Again, I don't have any like empirical evidence of that, but all my experiences working before I got my master's, I worked with a lot of people with schizophrenia and hoarding and blah, 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 blah. So like all my experiences really kind of, this is what it is. But again, mm-hmm. anecdotal evidence. Mm-hmm. With that being said, people who have abilities like psychic abilities, mediumship, whatever, a lot of them come in like, I think I have schizophrenia. And I've had a handful of clients who were like that. I'm like, that's not schizophrenia at all. You got some abilities there. And slowly helping them realize they're not crazy is always the word they use. I hate using that mm-hmm. word too. No, you are not diagnosable for this. This is actually what's going on. You do have anxiety because of this. You do have depression because of this. You do have PTSD mm-hmm. because of this. That's not schizophrenia. A lot of people get unfairly diagnosed with schizophrenia when it's really just they have some abilities. And a lot of therapists, it doesn't matter what degree or background they have, a lot of therapists are just,
okay,
I'm not going there. You are crazy. You do have schizophrenia mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And it's such a disservice.
Yeah.
I had a client come to me several years ago. He was in an abusive relationship. His wife was the abusive one. And he did have some abilities. And his dad was abusive too. His brother took advantage of him, blah, 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 blah. And this poor guy just really needed to figure out what was going on within himself so he can navigate all of this controlling and abusive people around him. And when we parted ways, he was doing a lot better. He didn't have schizophrenia. His anxiety and depression were under control. And he started embracing what he was experiencing.
I hope more people are starting to help and see those aspects with this, like, especially in the last several years. I feel like we've seen much more of a spiritual awakening of people being like, I'm not buying what I've been sold all my life as to what's in the Bible or what's in this or what's there. And it's fascinating when you see people break it all down. But hopefully we start seeing more like you who are taking into account, like, there are other things out there we can't fully explain. Science can explain a lot. But isn't a belief in religion just the same as a belief in the afterlife, in other things? We don't have physical evidence. We try. But it's still a belief. And that's, I saw someone talk about that with astrology, you know, because they're always like, oh, girls get so fascinated by stupid planets and rocks and things. Okay. But don't you have a belief in a dead guy rose and... started walking 3 days later, like, and this is not a hit on anybody in religion, but it's just that same factor of, isn't faith and belief just a belief in something you can't prove?
Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm going deep again. God, you guys, I am such in a weird spot tonight. I am all over the map. I am just everywhere.
You're good. Go deep. Take it deeper. I love it.
Oh, yeah. You're going to regret that.
You don't even know what my day job. Well, you're going to get a taste of my day job. You're right, though. On the flip side of this, Amy says in season 3, episode 12, that dead people and entities can cause hallucinations, fear, and panic. So that's where the spiritual stuff impacts us mentally as well, emotionally, whatever, whatever. Work through this next stuff really quick. So with depression, the shutdown response, a lot of people describe like a dark cloud or a dark entity or something. And really that represents just the heaviness, the weightiness of the depression itself. I don't know if you guys have ever had a major depressive episode. I hope you haven't, but they fucking suck. Let me tell you. It's basically literally a dark cloud of depression. Just
it was called 2016.
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Actually, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's when I saw the physical manifestation of it. The one time that I ever had an experience where I felt scared was I was sleeping and there's a dark mass that came speeding at me from the upper corner of my room.
Oh, shit.
And I can't remember exactly what it was, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was in 2016 because that was my mostly spiral year.
Yeah, that would track for sure. I had lots of clients where we would start doing work. We would do EMDR, work through the trauma. My favorite clients, you're not supposed to have favorites, but you do. Anyway,
everyone does.
He always had this like dark cloud following around. And by the time we were done, he's like, you know what? That dark cloud is just an annoying little fly. And I'm just going to grab it, put it in my pocket. Fly's gone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, if you squish it. They just stay gone.
Well, he wanted it in his pocket so he could have more control over it.
There you go.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, just had to touch on that. So then there's intergenerational trauma. Intergenerational trauma is when we have trauma ourselves, the way we act, interact, behave, that gets transmitted relationally, behaviorally. Mm-hmm. It is not necessarily it's just genetics. It's not. It's epigenetics, but really that what gets transmitted is our attitudes, our behaviors, our interactions, so on and so forth. And a lot of the time with intergenerational trauma, it is just intergenerational trauma, but there's also attachments. I had a lady who her whole life was depressed. She's in her early 70s now, and her entire life she had negative cognition, like, I'm bad, I'm not good enough. After doing some work, turns out she had some preverbal trauma that was pretty bad, and it went on for several years. Preverbal trauma is basically before our brains are developed enough to have picture and words play-by-play memory. So that's explicit memory, play-by-play words, pictures, all of that stuff. So implicit mm-hmm. memory is what our bodies remember. Our emotions, our body sensations are always accurate. Implicit memory is always accurate. Explicit memory can be faulty. So anyway, through ego state work, for the parts work, through some somatic stuff, this preverbal trauma came out. Had to do like a couple years worth of just parts work on that. And mm-hmm. we're finally really reprocessing through it. She's at a lot more of a peaceful place. She doesn't have nearly the symptoms that she used to. She's actually got a good relationship with herself now. Mm-hmm. She always kind of hated herself. Mm-hmm. And she had a couple of attachments that came to her from her perpetrator, who likely came from his perpetrator, mm-hmm. so on and so forth through the family. She actually had attachments. She went to a Reiki master, got them removed. That helped wow. our process. Our process yeah. was doing fine before, but it definitely helped afterwards for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now I'm going to get to the meaty stuff. So this wasn't meaty already.
Was it like the tides that bind? Just kind of like there's a Springsteen song called The Tides That Bind. And so just breaking through, because to me, like I visualize and see, you know, like I think about it in that manner. And I know with Jenny that my grandma has told me keep doing it. Because there's been on that side of the family, I mentioned before, but there is a long line of holding grudges. Mm-hmm. And other stuff that has gone on, and it's
fun.
Keep breaking it.
Yes, yeah. Do definitely keep breaking it. Absolutely.
But isn't that kind of what Reiki does? Is they actually like have you physically picture an actual rope and then breaking it? I mean, isn't that kind of what it's like? I don't know, but I could be wrong.
That sounds more like just a cord cutting, but I'm sure a lot of Reiki practitioners will use that technique.
Oh, okay.
He essentially works on the energy in our bodies, our physical self, and just kind of gets it flowing in the right direction or unblocks something or, you know, whatever. Okay. So Reiki is energetic healing, essentially, if I put it in a nutshell. Yeah. So with dark parts of self, these are very, very burdened parts of self. Usually protector and critical parts. So dark parts are the ones that get to be scary, like violent thoughts, wanting mm-hmm. to be physically violent, so forth. A lot of clients I've had have had dark parts, and a lot of the time they were black with red eyes. And this is just a societal thing. Like mm-hmm. when we watch cartoons and something scary, it's usually black with red eyes. I mean, this is just kind of how we all visualize these things. Our parts of self mm-hmm. They look like a direct representation of our idea of what that part is.
Yeah, it's not sunshine and daisies.
No, not always, especially the more burdened they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The more unburdened they are, the more they look like us, which is what we want. Mm-hmm. But these dark parts, critical parts, are the ones that are driving the bus. And these are the ones that say, this is not right. This is the way it's supposed to be. If it's not this way, I'm going to make it this way kind of stuff. And the protector part is kind of roped in, handcuffed, to the critical part and has to do what critical says. So if critical says, you're a terrible person, I hate you, then protector part has to come in and hate them somehow. That's when like murders and all sorts of abuse happen, or worse than murder, because there is worse than that. Mm-hmm. So in The Dead Files, season 2, episode 10, Tormented, this one always stood out to me. Family had, and this was a past living family on the client's property. The family had to hide the younger kids from dad so he wouldn't beat them. So basically, older kids were hiding the younger kids because mm-hmm. dad just indiscriminately beat them all. So they were trying to protect the younger kids. He beat a horse so bad, someone had to pull him off.
Mm-hmm. I remember this
episode.
Yeah. Mom walked in and saw him trying to smother the baby. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who kills the baby?
Yeah.
An example from my work, I had a client 10 years ago or so who was in a bad domestic violence situation. She and her older kids had left her toddler with her boyfriend. When she mm-hmm. came home, toddler was dead.
Oh,
boyfriend
God.
Framed her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, not a good situation.
Yikes.
This always comes from dark parts of self. It is always about the ultimate power and control. the more shit we go through in the life, the more we build up all this negative burdened parts of self, the more they get exiled, the more these dark parts of self operate. We don't want that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So there's a big difference between abuse versus oppression or possession. Oppression is when an entity is negatively impacting you, but not taking over. Possession, of course, taking over, whatever. Big difference between abuse and possession and oppression. I don't know if you guys have seen the new Puff Daddy docuseries about all of the horrific abuse, but at one point someone said, Puffy, you're a demon, because he was being so outrageously abusive. No, he's not a demon. He is just a complete 100% prick. Yeah. Watching that, it kind of explained how he got to be that point. When he was a little kid, his dad was murdered. His mom basically said, you're the man now, even though he was like, I don't know, in elementary school. And if you come home and things aren't right, you have to go back out and make it right. So basically she told him, you have to fight. You have to be the best. You have to be the strongest. And if you're not the strongest, you have to be the strongest. And so he was basically raised to have his burden protector and burden critical part out all the time. Well, if you're not the one who's in control of everything, you ain't shit to me. That's a horrible way to raise a kid.
Yeah,
a part of me has some pity for him, but he's still making his choices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people are raised in shitty situations. That's and they don't all turn out that way.
That's right. That's why I'm saying he's making his choices.
There's, and I think that goes back to that whole nurture versus nature and the aspects of like, do serial killers, are they created or, you know, are do they grow up that way or do it's all of it. I think there's a spot that triggers. There's a spot in the brain that gets triggered. And, you know, maybe if 1, 2, 3 things happen. But, you know, how many times have we seen from those serial killers from the 80s and 90s where it's like, oh, man, he was the pillar of the community.
Right.
That's never right. Would have expected him.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own kids. Yep. He didn't abuse his kids.
Probably did, but.
Jared from Subway has his own kids, too.
Gross.
Right? Tell me about
it. Talk about a bad documentary. I mean, not poorly done, but that was real hard to watch.
But, it was. So one thing I'm going to mention about all of this from AA or any 12-step, like a lot of my adaptive clients have been in AA for a while and they teach me a lot of stuff. And they say that our ego, which always comes from our critical part of self, burden critical, our ego puts us in the God position. And that's again, the attitudes, the ideologies that we have. I'm right, you're wrong. I'm always correct. Kind of stuff. So the God position. And I think that's a good way to put it. So some Amy quotes here. In season 2, episode 25, Tortured Souls, she's talking about an entity. He has extremely bad intentions. I was watching through the eyes of a little girl that he was stalking and then murdered. He was so filled with negativity that he was like turning into kind of like a dark mass. And I think that's how people see him. He's just evil. This was the entity's choice in life and choice in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
What's evil is his choices, not him as an entity necessarily. If he made better choices, he wouldn't be so evil. And she goes on to say, he wants to continue doing what he started doing in life. His intentions are to kill your daughter. He is stalking his prey. So he's excited. He's happy.
Ugh.
Right. Again, it's these attitudes. I love killing little kids. I mean, wow, who has an attitude? Seriously.
And Pennywise.
Yes. Exactly. So I know we talked about when we met in person, like the shark eyes. So I kind of looked this up and this is going to be a long thing. I'm just going to condense as much as possible. So another NIH paper, essentially, National Institutes of Health. The pupil dilates after an arousing stimulus, thought, or emotion. This is the psychosensory pupil response. Whatever activates the mind causes the pupil to dilate. So piggybacking off of what Amy said about this entity, he wants to continue doing what he was doing in life, killing kids. He's excited. He's happy. So that kind of stuff. would create like the shark eyes, or like, you know, someone's eyes going black or whatever. Just the arousal and the level of arousal will make her eyes dilate more. So that was the physical tie-in with this sort of deal that I think is really interesting. So I'm going to contrast the shark eyes, the natural phenomenon, with a more spiritual thing. So when you guys were doing the interview with Spirit Mechanics, they said Keith, the guy they helped out in Nebraska, his eyes permanently changed color after the exorcism. They were nasty brown gray when they got there, and they changed after that. So sometimes the way our eyes are really will indicate if there is an actual possession or not, or if it's just us. I think we can tell the difference. All right. So the real fun stuff, parts of self breaking off into PK manifestations. So I like to explain the containment system. So parts of self contain these traumas. So I'm sure you guys have seen the original Ghostbusters movie where, you know, they have their ghost containment unit. The asshole redhead comes in and shut this down. And they're like, I wouldn't do that. If I don't care. Shut this down. They turn
from the EPA.
Exactly. Yeah. So they
somebody
shut down.
Fix this.
The ghosts go. This is what happens to us too. When our parts of self can't or won't hang on to this trauma anymore, it can go. Like with my client last week, this trauma memory unlocked. It was the right time. It was. But anyway, it was just the containment system said the part of self hanging on to it's like, I'm done with this. I'm done hanging on to this. It's yours.
Wow.
So that happens sometimes, but when we're not aware of that, and this client of mine and I have been doing parts work for at least 5 years now, probably closer to seven. If we're not aware of this, we keep pushing these parts of self away from us. It's the parts of self stay in our mind physically. These neural networks are in our brain, but the energy, the psychic energy from these parts of self can't be contained. So this is what forms like PK manifestations and poltergeists. This is psychic energy breaks off from us because we're not physically containing it anymore. And this is not anything we do consciously. This is all subconscious. In Dead File Season 2, Episode 10, Tormented, the PKM manifestation stemmed from a living person. Amy says it was purely from the person's energy, and it started feeding off negativity from the people there, and it absorbed fear, anger, depression, which is all three stress branches of the stress response. So while it breaks off, it impacts us and it feeds. It's a negative feedback loop. One of Amy's recommendations for that client was to see a therapist. So what she's not managing that's feeding this PK manifestation doesn't keep building up and feeling it. The next episode, season two, episode 11, Amy says, this one makes you hurt inside, like lots of nervous energy here. Your heart's beating, your head's dizzy, you're kind of nauseous, you feel like you're going to fall over. This isn't good. And that's from that nervous energy. And these were two different PK manifestations. I see these two dark things in each corner of the room. They're very tall. I felt like they were trying to reach something or someone because they're coming in towards the bed. They're just sitting there watching. They're very, very creepy. These things can make you feel dizzy and sick and nauseous. And this one is sadness. It's very hard to control your emotions here. We're very all over the place. So PK manifestations are never good because we're not dealing with our stuff to begin with. It's negatively impacting us and everything around us. We're feeding it. It's just not good. So one interesting thing, I'm a Reiki 1 and 2 level practitioner. No, I'm not a master by any means. But the main guy in the U.S., William Lee Rand, he does an article in Reiki News magazine, every magazine. He says, one reason grounding is necessary and so valuable for everyone, but especially helpful for healers, is that having unresolved emotional, spiritual, and energetic injuries of various kinds creates pain that makes it uncomfortable for us to remain entirely in our bodies. Therefore, things are breaking off or we're shoving it to the back of the bus. And until we can develop and use methods to heal these injuries, we survive by moving our pain outside our bodies. We blame others, direct anger or guilt outwardly without taking responsibility for circumstances. This transfer happens somewhat unconsciously And while it is not entirely healthy, it provides us with some relief. This is why we do this. But by doing this, we also lose touch with important parts of our awareness, which reduces our flexibility, adversely affecting our energy level, emotional range, and physical body, making our lives less enjoyable and more difficult for us to function. So he put it in a really succinct way that I wouldn't have been able to put. And it, I found this like perfect timing. So essentially, what we're not aware of, what we're not owning, can really, without our even being aware, impact us negatively and those around us, our physical environment, our emotional environment, energetic environment. Our awareness is the key to all of this. So I named my business Higher Awareness Therapy and Consulting because higher awareness is about being aware of our own parts of self, our emotions, our body sensations, our energy, our thoughts, our intuition, objectively and without judgment, as well as listening to, interacting with, and directing these aspects of ourselves for our best good, while still being respectful of, but not responsible for, others. So that's higher awareness.
Cool.
That's the way I see it, at least.
Okay.
So that's really the bottom line for all of this is our awareness. How aware are we about this? The more aware we are, the more we can take steps to reclaim our lives, our homes, entities go away, parts of self, you're not taking over the bus, I'm in charge, kind of stuff. Our awareness is the key to all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I love
and that's
that.
And that's my spiel.
That's your spiel. All right. Well, I want you to tell people where they can find you if they want to learn more about your practice and what you do. You just said it's called Higher Awareness.
Yes,
but...
higherawarenesstherapy.com. My only contact info is my email, essentially. So Brittany, Brittney, at higherawarenesstherapy.com.
Okay, great. Well, this was wonderful. I'm sure we have a lot more things we could talk about this. So maybe we'll have to have you back another time.
Thanks for letting me nerd out on all the science stuff, because I find I obviously connect towards the science stuff and it's fun. But you know, with all your Reiki stuff, heal me, would you? Thanks.
Absolutely. if I can throw out one more thing, because I totally forgot to mention this, like, you guys are talking about, like, where did that nice Steve go?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Steve DeShavi, like, he used to be very nurturing and patient, and he, like, had admiration for Amy. But the later seasons, he is, like, being a dick. Difference in parts of self. His nurturing part was a lot more out and free to be itself. But in the later seasons, it was just mostly his critical part, front and center. I don't know what changed for him personally. But, yeah.
I would look at the years.
Yeah, I know he had a couple divorces.
And what was allowed to be out in the open at a certain point in time, that's now back out.
Yes.
Worse.
I think there was a time when people who had beliefs like Steve had to zip their lips about it because it wasn't acceptable to speak about that in public. And now, apparently, you can say whatever the fuck you want. And so that makes people say things that they wouldn't normally say.
Right.
And
it makes it a lot easier to see through the bullshit, though.
It does. It does. And for that, I'm kind of grateful, because then I know who to stay away from, because they say right ahead, you know, right out there in the open, you know, I'm racist and I hate people that aren't male and white. And great. I'm glad to know that, because then I can just put you in a little box and you're not going to be in my life. It's a little harder when they're a public figure, but yeah.
It's better to have that out front, because you do get to see immediately what their attitudes and ideologies are. And as I was hopefully making a really strong point, that it's not our mental health that creates these attitudes. It's these attitudes that create all sorts of dumb shit.
You're born with it.
Yeah. Well, you're raised with it.
Raised with it, I would say.
Yes. You know, people like that, it's because of their parents. I mean, we always blame our parents for everything, and it's a big joke in therapy, but...
goes back to the nature and nurture.
It's true.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, at the same time with, you know, white male privilege and all of that stuff, if you're grown, you know, your entire life into this is the way society is, and, you know, I'm supposed to, even if you're subconsciously thinking this, well, I'm supposed to be ahead, and you're not. Those so subconscious attitudes are really driving a lot of this too, even if they don't realize that this is what's going on within themselves. Well, I'm not a racist. I'm not a sexist. Mm-hmm. But yeah, your privilege is showing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just a different type of attitude or ideology as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, just had to get that info about Steve.
About Steve.
His part of self.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it makes me think about other people I know. And like what drives them to do things. And I can look at the list of the different parts of self and go, oh, that's this one. Or, I mean, obviously I don't have the background you do, but I like to pretend like I do. No, I'm just kidding. But it's so interesting to me that I want to learn more about it. So yeah, it's really cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
We'll probably have to do this again. All right. Well, we will talk to you later.
Sounds good.
All
right,
bye.
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 Thanks for joining us this week. Next time, we will be recapping the Dead Files episode called Forever Scarred. It's from season 3, and it aired November 22nd, 2013. This was my choice, and I picked it because it has actually been on my list of favorites for so long that I forgot what it was even about. But on a recent rewatch, I decided it was time to cover it. It's a really good episode. So give it a rewatch and join us again in 2 weeks for the conversation on Forever Scarred. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Activity Continues podcast. We really appreciate you giving us your ears for a bit. Please feel free to drop us a note and say hi. And join us next time when the activity continues.
Nailed it.
The Activity Continues is produced by me, Amy, at Collected Sounds Media, and is part of the independent Collected Sounds Podcast Network.